Your online feature will begin in just a moment. First, a reminder that BBN is a listener-supported Christian radio and internet ministry. To support us, click donations at bbnradio.org. That's donations at bbnradio.org.
In the midst of your busy day, ladies, thanks for tuning in to Building Blocks for the Family. We're helping you build a strong family to the glory of God. Does the thought of raising teenagers intimidate you just a little? Are there some tips that we could learn today that would help us in the process? Well, Carol Parks has some thoughts for us today on parenting through the teen years. Here's Carol Parks.
Be on their side. Now, this sounds like a contradiction, but it really is not. Surely your teenager has figured out that life is not fair, no matter how hard you try to make it so. You know, I always tried to make it everything come out even, but it doesn't always. Life is unfair, but it still stinks sometimes, doesn't it, when life is unfair? And if your kids are going feeling a little bit like that, take them to the book of Genesis and the story of Joseph. Boy, if there was a teenager who had unfair, that was really unfair. He was 17 years old. He had a lot of unfair stuff. Let them know that even though life is unfair, you feel badly about it, you can't change it, but you understand that sometimes life is hard. This is what I mean. The first point under this, be their cheerleader along the sidelines or the manager in their corner. If your son is struggling with low self-esteem, he needs to hear from his family that he is great, that he is wonderful, that he is handsome, you know, whatever it is. If your daughter feels like a plain Jane, now is not the time to tell them, to remind her of the story of the ugly duckling, okay? find ways to help her feel beautiful. Now, I want you to understand where I'm coming from. It doesn't mean that suddenly we're sinking hundreds of dollars into plastic surgery for your child, okay? But when I was in junior high, there were two or three boys who kept telling me how ugly I was. And I am now almost 50. And I still remember that, and it still hurts. That's still in the back of my mind. So what you may ought to do, if your child is going through that junior high stage of kind of feeling ugly, your daughter, then help them find simple ways that would help them through that. Maybe she needs a pair of contacts. Maybe she just needs a new hairstyle. If she's got braces, grin and bear it. there's nothing you can do about braces. But help them if they're struggling in that particular stage. Just because that is one carryover, at least for girls. Or it was for me, anyway. For girls, that seems to carry over into adulthood. And of course, I'm talking about moderation in all things. But if your child is struggling in that area and there are ways that you can help them, then do that. Along those lines, get to know their friends and enjoy their friends if you can. Make your home where your kids' friends want to be. Now, let me tell you the secret to that. Have food. Lots of food. That's all you need. And they will come. I think in two instances, I remember one time when Eric had a bunch of friends over, and for some reason, we all ended up in the kitchen, and I don't think there was any food left, so it wasn't that, you know, they were drawn to the kitchen because of the food, but we were all standing around the kitchen just talking and laughing, and I still have that great memory of Eric as an 18-year-old doing that. Well, then my next memory is of our youngest son, Kyle. He had ran around with a bunch of guys. There were like seven or eight of them in his class. So they were just really close. They are still close. That's pretty cool that 6 or 7 years later they're still that close. But all of us were standing around again in the kitchen. We were talking about music. And here are these 17-year-old guys, and they were talking about, oh, how they wish they could play the piano. And one of them said, I wouldn't, Mrs. Parks, could you think you could still teach me to play the piano? I'm going, wow, this is from a 17-year-old? Cool. And they were talking about songs they liked, and one of the guys was learning the guitar, and I thought, this is priceless. You know that MasterCard commercial? This was a priceless moment because we were having so much fun. I was with all these boys and we were talking about music and they were asking me about music. I just was really excited about that. So one of the reasons why you want to get to know your kids' friends is it helps you know what's going on in your kids' lives, a little of their thinking. That's important. I wonder so much, and of course, you know, hindsight is always perfect vision, but I think about that tragedy in Columbine, and I wonder if part of it could have been prevented if those sets of parents had known what their kids' friends were thinking about, were spending their time on. You know, it might not have been prevented, but it is very important that we know, just know who your kids are hanging around, because sometimes who your kids are hanging around is not a good thing. I remember, and we'll get to this a little bit in the driving stage, but I remember one kid who Eric was hanging around. He had, I think, 3 car wrecks in the space of maybe 5 months. And I said, Eric, don't ride in the car with Blake. Don't ride in the car with him. And he was a good friend of Blake's. But Eric had already picked up on that. He said, oh yeah, no, he's a bad driver. You don't have to worry. But you know, they're, when you get to know your kids' friends a little bit, if there are red flags that you see, you better tell your kids about it. And you can do that if you know their friends a little bit. Listen when they talk. Really listen. Don't offer any advice unless they ask for it. Just listen. Now for my daughter, that was easy because she would talk all the time. It was great. In fact, I found out about my son's lives through my daughter because, you know, she was always right there. She would let me know all kinds of stuff. But for my boys, they just weren't talkers so much. So if there was an occasion that Eric would come into the kitchen while I was cooking supper, man, I dropped everything. Hey, forget it. Forget that cheese sauce. Tell me what you're thinking about today. Because that was so important because it was a little more rare. And I just wanted to listen to whatever they had to say. I laugh about my sister-in-law, married to my brother. She's a pastor's wife. She has homeschooled her 4 kids for many years. One of my nieces, one of her daughters, Janae, is just more quiet. And so we would be at our family gatherings, you know, Thanksgiving or Christmas or something like that. And she said, oh, Janae's about to say something. Be quiet. And I always got such a kick out of that because we know how important it is. Sometimes you cannot pull information out of your kids. So if there is that point when they just start talking, I'm telling you, drop everything and just listen. Don't chime in with, oh, yeah. And let me tell you something. Don't do that. Just listen. Just listen. That's what I mean about being on their side. Here are some ideas. And I was laughing with some ladies in our group today because I know it sounds like I'm condensing everything like in our family. We did this all the time, okay? This is stretched over years, you understand. We don't have a perfect family. But when my kids were in high school, I realized that some days you're coming home from school and it's just been a really hard day. Like when you come home from work and it's been a hard day. So when we got our computer, I was trying it out for the first time and I had this little create a card thing. And man, I was so excited. I was making cards for my children all the time. And I just put them on their beds, a different one. And for a week, they were getting a little create a card from their mom. Well, partly I was experimenting with the computer, but partly I realized, you know, maybe I just need to let them know. Just tell them, I just think they're wonderful. Oh, I think you're so great. Thanks. Thanks for being in our family. You know, like they didn't have a choice, but anyway. Sometimes when they would say, well, I need deodorant or I need shampoo or we need more toothpaste, well, I would put that on their pillow like it was a special present. And then maybe I'd put a candy bar there too, you know, because I just wanted them to know that I was on their side. One time I did this. I knew kind of how the outcome would be because my daughter is so terribly messy. And let me tell you, if you have a kid who's just messy, you know, Jennifer would have, she might try on 5 outfits before she decided which one she was going to wear to school. And of course, so the other 4 just lay everywhere. I finally, instead of always writing her about that, instead of nagging, I said, this is one thing I'm just going to have to let go, okay? I'm just going to have to let her be messy because I want a relationship that I can let some things go. And that was one thing I would have to let go. It was funny because she came to visit us a couple weeks ago. Her husband was in Ohio at his high school reunion. She was lonely, so she said maybe she could spend the night with us. She lives in Birmingham now. And so she was going to study because she's in graduate school. She was going to spend the weekend studying. She went to her old room, which, by the way, we have redecorated. And it was very neat, fresh coat of paint, all that kind of stuff. And Saturday night, I went into that room, and I started laughing because it was just awful. She had been there for one day. And she said, Mom, doesn't it just feel like old times? I said, yeah, it does. But anyway, so I knew how this was going to come out. But I decided to randomly one day, I was going to go in the children's rooms and just look at the condition of their rooms. Well, my boys are both quite neat. It just so happened that Eric hadn't made his bed that day, and Kyle had. So I awarded him. I made a little award thing. I gave him $5 for it, and it was just random, you know, just the neat room award for the day. Boy, he was real excited. I never did it again, but he kept his room neat for a really long time. Anyway, just figure out some things that you can do just to encourage them. At the same time, when you say you're on their side, pay attention to how they spend their free time, what they watch, how much time they spend on the computer. In our family, the computer, when our kids were growing up, was in our bedroom, and it was right beside our bed. It was 3 inches from the side that I sleep on. And I did not mind if they, because, you know, how high school kids, they're staying up real late. And I would go to bed with the computer screen just inches from my face. But I felt like even my presence there was a little bit of a deterrent. And of course, they weren't there all hours of the night because, you know, I would make them go to bed. But we just need to be really careful about that. One of the things I taught my boys, I told my boys that I was, one of the ways I was praying for them is about pornography. I wanted them to be so afraid of it because when I see the statistics, when I see the statistics among ministers, oh, it is so frightening. And so I just told the boys how much I was praying that they would keep their eyes pure, that they would never look at it. Never look at a magazine. Never look at a computer screen that had horrible stuff on it. And I told them I was praying for them about that. When Eric went off to college, and he did go to a Christian college, he was our first one to go off, and I said, Eric, I wonder how they, is that a problem in college? And he said, oh, no, they put monitors, you know, some kind of screening on it so they can't get onto it. But he said, Mom, you scared us so bad, we never wanted to get near it. And I said, well, I'm glad because I still pray about that. So if you have boys, make sure your boys know. And the problem is not in just the looking one time, but when I read the statistics, the addiction comes on so quickly, and it's so hard to break that you don't want them even to start. So just think about that. In relation to the computer, you know, MySpace and Facebook is so popular right now, but I think we even need to be careful. Our kids need to know that we know a little of what they're doing out there, even if we don't know everything, because there's junk that just creeps up so quickly in there. Cell phones, video games, dates, where are they going? You need to know. I tell you, one time, Eric didn't come home at a time that we thought was appropriate. I got on the phone, and this was before we had a cell phone. I called the girl's home, and of all things, he picked up. He answered the phone, and I said, Eric? He said, Mom? I said, it is way too late. You better get home right now. He said, okay, I'll get home. But I wanted them to know that I would call, that I wasn't afraid to call if they were not home at a time that I thought they needed to be. Number five, prepare them and pray for them in growing up. When our oldest son was in ninth grade, that's when I got scared to death. I said, we only have four more years with Eric, and it's going to go by so fast. So this is what I did. Eric was in ninth grade. Jennifer was in eighth grade. Kyle was in sixth grade. I was feeling very weepy that day. Now, just understand, it's the first day of his ninth grade. You know, that's supposed to be a pretty good time. I took them to school. I came home. I was crying. I said, I'm going to make these tears count. I went into Eric's bedroom. I got on my knees, and I prayed for him. I prayed that God would help him. And I said, well, I'm not through crying yet. I'm going to go to Jennifer's room, clear away the mess. I got on my knees beside Jennifer's bed, and I prayed for her. I prayed for her purity. I prayed that God would use her. Well, I was still crying. So I only had one room left, Kyle's room. I went into his room, and I kneeled in front of his bed, and I just prayed for Kyle and all those different things. And I realized, as you all have realized at this stage, how fast these years go by. They just are going to go rushing by. And whatever you're going to do to prepare them and teach them for life, you better get it in now, because you just won't believe how fast it does go by. Well, these 3 points that I just want to give you under this are not my own. They come from Dr. Tim Kimmel's book, Raising Kids for True Greatness. And all these points I have prayed for, but he just put it in a lot better way, so I want to say it the way he said it. The three most critical and life-changing decisions your teenagers will make are what they will do, their mission, with whom they will do it, their mate, and then for whom they will do it, their master. And I thought he put that so concretely and simply, but very powerfully. It's okay if your 18-year-old doesn't know what he or she wants to do with their life. I used to panic about that because I knew very early on that I wanted to be a teacher. From the time I started kindergarten, I knew this is what I want to do with my life. But some of my kids weren't that clear on what they wanted to do. And so don't panic if they get to that stage. Lead them in the direction you think might be toward their bent, but pray for them through this time, and be talking with them about it. Have you given any thought? What do you want to be when you grow up? Kind of that kind of thing. With whom they will do it. I think when our kids were still quite young, I prayed for who our children would marry. Like I said, our two oldest children got married last summer. That was huge. And it doesn't mean that I've stopped praying, because you and I know who are married. Marriage is going to have some hard times, some rough times, but good times too. But I'm grateful for that. So I'm still praying for Kyle, our 21-year-old, who is still single, that God would help him in the mate that he will have. But I want to share this story with you that you may want to use that I thought was so good, cool. Eric married a preacher's kid, Catherine, who is from Fredericksburg, Virginia. In the wedding ceremony, she presented Eric a ring that she wore when, from the time she was 13 and now she was 22 years old, she presented a purity ring to Eric during the wedding ceremony. And it was so, so touching to me. I asked Catherine about how that came to be, and she's got an older brother. And the four of them, her mom and dad and Catherine and Aaron, the four of them, when Catherine was 13 and Aaron was 16, the four of them had dinner together. And her mom and dad talked about the importance of this ring. They had engraved inside, "One with Christ," 1 Corinthians 6:17. But they explained that in her parents' wedding bands, it said "one in Christ." And they talked a little bit about the distinction. Catherine wore that on her left hand from the time she was 13. Aaron didn't. He was 16. He was a boy. He said he didn't wear jewelry. But anyway, he still had it, just the same. And so Catherine presented that to Eric on their wedding day. And I just thought that was so cool. And so I just give that idea to you because I think that's a really good idea. Because we have been in ministry for 20 years, I love some of the ideas that some people in our church have done. Dawn Baggett, her son just turned 16, and she had people who meant something in her son's life to write something, some memories and stuff like that, and then Dawn put it all in a book, and I thought that was really great for a 16-year-old. We have done that for kids who have turned 13, you know. Just let them know, we're cheering for you, we're on your side, we're praying for you. You might consider that if you haven't yet. And then, number six, and I'll be real fast with this. Oh, we're doing good on time. Expect to learn lessons yourself. God will use your children to perfect that which concerneth you. Psalm 138:8. I always think about the time when I was trying to teach my kids the gentle answer. A gentle answer turns away wrath. Because, you know, one of their siblings would say something and they'd have some cutting remarks. So we were trying to work on that. And we'd talk about it sometimes in the car when we were going to school in the morning. And I was sharing this, I think maybe with Dawn. I think I'm a pretty happy, cheerful person until I get behind the wheel of the car. And then I become, "Oh, get out of my way. What are you doing cutting in?" And I'm kind of like Jan Sylvius, everyone's a buddy. You know, everyone who cuts in front of me, that's a buddy. And so I was really letting somebody have it. And of course, they couldn't hear, my kids could hear. And Jennifer said, "A gentle answer, Mom." Yeah, you're right. So expect to learn things from your children. You will be humbled to learn humility. You will be driven to prayer by your newly licensed 16-year-old driver. In fact, you'll be driven to your knees more than ever before during those years. I think about one of the lessons that God taught me in learning to let my children be on their own. Jennifer, her senior year of college, got to be part of a tsunami relief thing in India. She was going to be flying separately from the group because of a buddy pass that she had been given. And so she was in the airport at midnight by herself, and the flight was full, and she could not get on. Now, this was even before I knew. She, of course, didn't know what to do. One of the workers at the airport said, "You shouldn't stay in this airport by yourself. You need to do something." So she sat down at a table in a restaurant. The man that came up to help her, she noticed, had on a band that had one of the little signs of the fish, you know, one of those. She said to him, "Are you a believer?" He said, "Yes, I am." So she just felt like she needed to explain her situation. Anyway, to make a long story short, she got in a rickshaw at 2 a.m., got to a motel by herself, and somehow got to an internet cafe so that she could email someone and just tell her. And she said, this is what she said. She said, "Somebody call my parents because they never check their email." So somebody from the college got that, and the vice president of the college called us and let us know. This was on a Sunday morning. And I was so scared. But I said, "I know that God sees her. And he knew this already, even before I did, and he was watching over her." And so for those hours that we were just nervous and wondering if she'd get back, here's this little blonde by herself in Bombay, God was watching out for her. And I learned a great lesson that day. I learned that same lesson when Eric had finished college. He had a summer job, but he didn't have permanent employment. We sent him to a Christian college, and he wasn't married. You know, I just felt so badly about that. And I would pray. I went through the Psalms and everything that talked about the path. I wrote that down, but I still paced. I still had insomnia. And finally, one day, God spoke to my heart, and he said, "Carol, he's my son, too." Okay, Lord, that's all I needed to hear. Because I knew that God knew, and he loved Eric more than I did. And so when I could just say, "I can give my children over to you," I did that when they were little. But, you know, you get a little older, and they get independent, and you have less control. But those lessons were priceless for me to learn. I'm glad, and I know I'll have to learn them again, but I'm glad that I am learning those lessons. In conclusion, remember the playground games that were interrupted with the do-overs? Wait a minute, do-over, do-over. We want to do that sometimes, don't we? That's why I love the first of the year. It's a do-over. I get to start all over again. That's why I love, I even kind of love Monday mornings, because if I blew it over the weekend, I'm glad I can have, you know, I've got Monday morning. I just love the first of the school year because it's like starting all over again. We don't quite get the same do-overs with our children. We can't say, "Oh, boy, that was really poor parenting skills. Let me do that one over again." We don't get to do that. If we frowned a lot more than we should have, we should have smiled more, we don't get those do-overs. But there is something that supersedes the do-over, and I just want to leave this with you in Lamentations 3. "It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness." So when you feel like, "Man, I've blown it, I can't get this back," remember, God's mercies cover all of those things. None of us are perfect. All of us mess up. We mess up a lot. And do our children suffer? Yes, sometimes they suffer. But God knows that. And God loves your children. And at this stage of their lives, even though it may be hard, he has their best in mind. So learn what you need to learn. Teach them what you can teach them. And rely on God to take care of your children through these years.
Our guest today has been Carol Parks. Parenting Through the Teen Years. Building Blocks for the Family is a production of BBN. We're trying to help you build a strong family to the glory of God. For more information on getting a copy of today's broadcast, you can visit us at bbnradio.org. Go to the program schedule and then click on Building Blocks for the Family. BBNradio.org.
That concludes this feature. We have many resources for you here at BBN. Click Resources at our website, BBNradio.org.